Now I'm excited to welcome into studio Dean Furman. Hey, Dean, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
So, you know, we tend to think of big companies. They're the people who pay big salaries. They have big, shiny buildings. But sometimes they're not so big on innovation.
Yeah, usually they're not. Usually, once a company gets to a certain size, usually things start to slow down, and it's more about compliance and protecting your operational profits you usually made in the past. And usually that innovation engine just dies very, very quickly.
So I think that can be a big problem. Also because I guess it becomes quite specialized, right? You have one person whose job it is to do one thing. Whereas when you're in a small business, you kind of have to be the jack of all trades, right? You've got to know what to do on HR and on marketing. And it's a pain, but it also kind of forces you to think out the box a little bit sometimes.
Definitely, definitely. And everything, once you get more and more and more people, then there's more and more and more committees. And then every decision starts being made by a committee. And I'm amazed when I consult a lot of the companies and go into them, it doesn't matter how senior you speak to people. On the majority of the circumstances, everything has to be decided by committee. And I think it's everyone scared to make decisions on their own because, you know, at least if you make it by committee, then it's no one's really to blame. It's, you know, all your executives made the decision. So.
And they say that a camel is a horse designed by committee, you know. So yeah. I definitely think that that is something that happens. But it's a big problem, right? We've seen big companies going down all the time. I saw just today that Ola, which is a ride-sharing service that's similar to Uber, is now moving into the UK. Now, you know, for a long time, Uber was the only thing that you did if you wanted to go get a ride. And now suddenly the Indian ride-sharers are coming in and they're eating their lunch. So even if you're a big company, it doesn't mean you kind of have to keep thinking about these sorts of things.
No, you continually have to. They say that the lifespan now of a Fortune 500 company is the exact same as the lifespan of a chihuahua. So...
But just as yappy.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like Paris Hilton's dog and your average Fortune 500 company have the same lifespan. So it's quite incredible. But the thing is that companies need to redefine risk. The way that they look at risk now very much is like, oh, what happens if we launch a product and it's not successful and we lose a small amount of money, or in their terms, maybe a small amount of money because of an initiative. But they don't realize most of them still that if they don't actually launch new things and respond to the changing world, their risk is that their whole company actually becomes non-relevant anymore or irrelevant anymore to the people that they're there to serve.
And whole sectors even, I saw a stat the other day that I think it's a little bit out of date, but basically it said 10 years ago, the Fortune 500 companies, the top 10, were all sort of oil, gas, energy, whatever. And today there's like one of those left, and now it's all tech companies, Facebook, Google, Amazon just hit 1 trillion. So you literally, not only could your company go out of fashion, your whole industry could evaporate.
Yes, and I often talk about the example, even people talk about self-driving cars. Mm-hmm. And in whenever there may be, it's a question of when rather than if they come to fruition. Mm-hmm. And that example, if you just think about it, the number of industries that will be completely changed because of that, you know, like the insurance industries and the certain car industries are the obvious ones. But even think about like
delivery industries,
exactly,
the petrol industries, Lindiwe,
and those with huge parking lots and the. You know, and there's so many other things. The town planners have the cops that can't collect the hundreds of millions of fines because no one's breaking any rules. You know, things in an instant by certain technologies can disrupt whole industries. And it is a crime almost for the board of directors that are put in the charge and the executives that are put in charge for companies not to properly be in tune with that, because in the end, they're there and they think, okay, we need to make sure that this company's act responsibly. But most of the time it's like these 60-year-old dudes that have done well in the past and understand the typical old-fashioned traditional business really well, and they can look at different operational risks and how things are going, but they aren't in tune at all with the way that the world's working now and the new risks that are there. So there's huge risk to a lot of these companies that haven't changed the way that they operate.
So how does it work for you? I mean, you're a consultant. You have to help out these big companies. You have to talk to committees. I feel very sorry for you. How do you kind of break it to people that they have to be more innovative and they have to kind of get out there and do it? And how do you get them if you can get them around the mental change, how do you get them to start thinking more innovatively And even in the structure of the company, I imagine, has to change for this sort of thing.
Yeah, it really is a puzzle. There's so many different pieces of that puzzle that all need to fit into place to make that whole company innovate like a well-oiled machine. And often coined the term sort of organizational neuroplasticity. So that's really how do you rewire your organization's brain to think very differently, to be able to innovate. And it's very much a culture thing before anything else and a mindset thing before actually the what do you do. And you really have to, it is tough changing certain people's perspective, but I think people get it. Very quickly, the thing then is to fight against the habit to just go back, you know, to have amazing conversations and do amazing work with them and then go back to the status quo of doing. And the thing is that, a lot goes towards how companies are rewarded. One thing that, people often look over is that most CEOs are just employees. Most people operating these huge companies, you think, oh, it's the boss, it's his company. It's not his company, unless it's someone who's like the founder. And that's why companies like Discovery have done very well. Adrian Gore, it's been like his baby, and he's got a long-term vision for it. And he cares way more about the company than just the next
quarter
results.
Right?
Exactly. For 90% of the rest, the CEO and those executives look at it and be like, okay, well, have a very selfish perspective, I find, to be like, okay, let's make sure how can we look at the next thing so my bonus is related to that and my performance will be looked at against the next results. I have to keep the board of directors happy and the shareholders and everything like that. And everything's acted against sort of that as the yardstick instead of being like, we making this a long-term success. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And that's why Discovery has gone different countries, different industries and done things like that because it's not like Adrian Gore, it's not his job there at Discovery. It's his passion, is his life. He's on a bit of a mission to change that. And whenever you see that the founder of a company is still sort of the head and running it, the culture's very different. So it starts from the top.
We've even seen with Apple, you know, once they lost Steve Jobs, although they went to 1 trillion, it doesn't quite have the slickness and the attention to detail that they had with some of their previous tech. And you know, some of the stuff hasn't worked. And they've had to sort of work with that because they haven't had that founder, you know, anymore.
Yeah, no, definitely. So that mindset, it's a lot easier to change, whereas people that want to change, it's like anything else, is that there has to be people that actually want to truly grow the company long term and to make sure that the company doesn't just last for the next few years while they're there, to actually grow exponentially into the future and have that vision and have that passion for helping people. And, then that helps a lot. And then it's easy, the hows and the, you know, how to put everything else in place. The rest of the puzzle sort of comes together.
It's all about the attitude. Dean, thank you so much for coming in. If people want to get hold of you, maybe you're a big company and you're listening and you're not being innovative enough. Can people get hold of you to?
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, I got a complicated email address, but it's dean@1064degrees.com, or look me up on LinkedIn, Dean Furman. And yeah, you could buy my book, Exponential Potential.
It's the guy who's not playing the soccer. It's the other Dean on
LinkedIn. The one with the bigger beard, the bigger stomach, all that stuff, you know. Big ideas, I guess.
Okay, well, there you go. I wouldn't call it a complicated email, just Dean. It's an innovative one.
Dean@1064degrees.com. If you need help growing your company and innovating, call me.
Great. There we go, Dean Hearn. Thank you so much. Innovative music coming up next.